This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast number 176. It is the 31st of March. It's the end of the first quarter. What a quarter it's been, ladies and gents. Volatility, tacos every day. People know the in-joke regarding that. And the FTSE going up and down like I don't know what. And same with the S&P, the NASDAQ, and the Dow, and almost every single market across the world, all because of the war that's raging across the Straits of Hormuz and Iran, et cetera, and all the other countries that are now being dragged into it. Henry, any words regarding the volatility we've had in the first 3 months of the year so far? Any words?
Well, I mean, first of all, I suppose to take it to the human level, I could only express shock, really, that we seem to be blowing up half the Middle East again. And I hope that people that are in Iran and the Lebanon and Dubai and Qatar and the rest of the Middle East are as safe as they can be. If there's anybody over there that's listening, I do hope you and your families are as safe as can be. I know Gallagher, we've got officers in that direction of the world. We've got colleagues that are basically locked in their apartments, unable to get out. They've shut the offices down. It's a pretty scary time, to be honest. And we're very lucky here in England to basically be watching this on the news from afar. But, you know, it's a scary time, and it does seem to be escalating, Peter. It really, really does. And my hope is that sense will prevail amongst those that really ought to have wiser heads.
Indeed. We have to be mindful of the situation, and I am concerned that it might escalate. I'm trying not to take much notice of the intermittent or daily sort of it's over with one, it's over. I'm just looking at what the oil price tells me, and that's my indicator as to whether it's going to be continuing and going on, and it looks like it's going to do that. So let's go to a more positive space, Henry. Yeah. I want to start this or continue this podcast of 176 with the absolutely fantastic Dr. George Cooper that we had on Twin Peaks Investing Podcast.
What a guest.
176, giving us a masterclass on all things private credit and investing. Founder and CIO of Equitile Investments and manager of the Equitile Resilience Fund, which was absolutely smashing it out of the park at 12% per annum compounded for 10 years since going IPO. Some of the feedback we got was brilliant. I've got to start with the feedback and absolutely amazing graphic that we got from Invest Like a Sloth. You can go and find this on X, please, ladies and gents. The account is at investlike34277, and it's a picture of a sloth, food for thought, pictures, Twin Peaks, you name it. Work of genius. A couple of cracking recent guests giving much food for thought. That was from Investor Sloth, but it was about the artistry there. At Secret Accountant, thank you ever so much for giving us a retweet and a comment as well. Great podcast as ever. George was really informative on the big picture. I work in private equity, and I'm perplexed with private debt and credit and the effect of it blowing up. And then his solution comment was, just diversify and do something you can do something about your health. Invest in it, make a difference. Great and poignant comment there. And I'm going to give another one out of the many that we did have as well, from Nathan Reading at Nathan R999. Excellent episode with George Cooper. Have managed to secure the two books he referred to in the pod via a secondhand site. Looking forward to reading these. Keep up the amazing guest, exclamation mark. Thank you, Nathan. Comments regarding the first that pod with George Henry? I know you were
What a
absolutely beaming all
guest.
the way through it. And the fact some of the questions you gave him was like, oh, Henry, that's a very good question. I was like, get in there, Henry.
I thoroughly enjoyed having George on the show. Super nice chap. And to say he's so experienced, I thought he was very polite to us two muggins, sitting here asking the rookie questions. It's also really nice to hear somebody with such an articulate view. I mean, George's experience is vast, and it's lovely to have him on the show, or it was lovely to have him on the show, sharing that with the audience. And I would encourage those of you that enjoyed the episode to keep in touch with George. Do reach out to him. He's quite chatty,
Absolutely.
very friendly. So yeah, do keep in touch. And if you haven't already, do go and check out his firm, Equitile Investments, because as we alluded to on the last podcast, they've got some pretty impressive returns, and certainly caught me off guard when I went and had a look live on air. So yes, worth exploring.
Absolutely. We've got to point out again, this is an individual that agreed to come on our show, 30 years experience working globally for the likes of Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Deutsche Bank, Blue Crescent Capital, and now running his own firm regarding Equitile Investments. So definitely go and reach out to him, follow him on X, find him on LinkedIn, etc., etc. That's definitely somebody to keep in touch with, in the sense of he's got his finger on the pulse as to what's going on regarding the markets. And if you ever got any worries about what his thoughts are on the markets, or sorry, your thoughts on the markets, check out what his thoughts are on the market. And if he's saying he's pulling the plug, you might want to follow suit. If that third book is coming out regarding the markets and he's telling you about it, you might want to take heed. Right. So I had a chat with Henry about what to talk about. And we both came to the same sort of conclusion for this particular podcast, because some of you may or may not be aware that there are just a few days left, ladies and gents. Not on the world, because it's not going that bad.
Oh, don't
But
say that.
I don't want to shock you. Sorry. Let me rephrase that. We're going to talk about the ISA season, ladies and gents. And there's just a few days left regarding this current year's ISA. You have got, let me just check my notes here. You've got to use up, this is the final chance to use up your ISA allowance. That's for those that have got a few bits of spare cash, up to £20,000 tax free. You've got to use it up before it renews for the next financial year on the 6th of April. So use it up. Okay. Why, Henry will probably go into this a bit later, but the beauty about an ISA, let me explain some of that. Are you going to explain this later on, Henry, or not?
We can both explain it.
Right. Okay. The stocks and shares ISA. It helps you to sidestep some capital gains tax on your investments. And the beauty about the ISA is that you can pay in from £1 to £20,000 per year going forward. That, however, is going to change. I think it's April 2027. It drops down to 12K. Am I right in this? They've changed the rules. Anyway, go and check. But it's going to drop down to 12K. As far as I remember, they were changing the rules. However, if you're the average family, of which Henry and I do not fall into that category, of two parents in the household and two children in the household, you can open junior ISA times two and the cash ISA times two. That means for those families that are wealthy enough, they can put aside in a stocks and shares ISA for the year 25 to 26, which is now about to close, £58,000. And you could have done that for the previous X amount of years that the ISA has been running at that particular maximum of £20,000. So it's a consideration to be had. If you've got any spare change and you can put another extra £100 or another £1,000 in the ISA before it shuts down and closes that window for what you were allowed this year, then you might want to consider doing so. Doesn't mean you have to use it up in the next 5 days. And similarly, when the new ISA season opens, you don't have to use that 20K immediately. Do not rush. Have a look at what's going on in the market, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to talk ISAs. the good, the bad, the indifferent, and share some of the ideas that we think look interesting. But go away and do your research, because anything Henry and I say on here is not financial advice. It's not financial recommendations. It's just suggestions for you to go and research. And then you can tell Henry and I what you think about them, if you wish.
I will just clarify a point now, Peter.
Yes, please.
The 12,000 allowance, and bear in mind, we are not giving financial advice here. So please do get independent financial advice before acting on anything we say. But from April 6th, 2027, the overall annual allowance will remain 20,000.
20, yeah.
The maximum contribution allowed into a cash ISA will drop to 12. So it's the cash portion. At the moment, you can either put 20,000 into a cash ISA or 20,000 into a stocks and shares ISA.
Thank you for that clarification, Henry. We need to get that correct. Thank you.
So, yes, I mean, fundamentally, the ISA, the individual savings account, this, I think, was originally called a PEP, personal equity PEP plan, back when yes. dinosaurs roamed the earth and Peter still had hair.
Careful, careful, young man.
Now, it's not an investment idea. It's not a type of vehicle you can go and buy. It's a structure. It's an account type, and a really valuable one that basically takes tax out of the equation and allows your capital to compound without friction. But to me, the kind of question I'm thinking about with the new ISA season is not just what to buy, but how am I going to deploy that capital in a way that's got a proper framework to it, not just today, but over the long term. I mean, it's no good me going out and just splurging 20,000 on April the 6th and buying who knows what and hoping for the best. Now, admittedly, for those of us that have got 20,000 lying around, you know, that's probably a nice problem to have. But I think the principle is that a lot of people talk about the ISA deadline almost like an investment signal. Oh, gosh, April 6th coming up. You better go and get spending.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is that investment opportunities don't become attractive just because the tax year is ending. Rushing
Correct.
Decisions, making last-minute allocations, if you've not used your allocation up for this year and you need to get the money into the account, you can put it in and leave it as cash. You don't have to invest it all in one go. And so that works both for money you're putting in before the end of this year and for new money you're going to add next year. And so I wanted to kind of talk through on this episode a little bit about how you might build a framework for deploying the capital and maybe take a bit of a breath and think about what you want to do with it before you dive straight in. So this all started with an article I published at the weekend, actually, which was all around ISA season. So on The Ethical Entrepreneur, I released an article which was all around this idea of investing frameworks and ISA season and how I see my framework going into the new year. And it's really about trying to assign every pound in my portfolio with a specific sort of role. So I want some of the capital in my ISA to be working in long-term compounders, things where the longer I hold them, the more valuable they get. Maybe their margins improve, maybe they get bigger, maybe their net asset value increases, or their earnings per share increase over time. Obviously, I've also got a bit of a bias towards income-producing assets. So this is where a tax shelter adds particular value, because you pay no tax on those dividends that you receive. Whereas if you hold dividend-producing shares outside of an ISA, you then have your dividend tax to pay. I'm also slightly tempted by some out-of-favour opportunities. And this is Peter's fault all over. I'm blaming Peter 110% here. But this is where...
Oh, my gosh.
This is where I've looked at the market and, you know, I've assessed that maybe sentiment rather than fundamentals is driving the price. Maybe there's some fantastic opportunity that's been really beaten up, really trodden down. It's been set on fire and thrown out the window and it's in the mud. And I've come along and gone, blimey, you know, this thing might just revolutionise the British economy this time next year. I'll have a bit. Now, I don't necessarily want to load up my entire allowance with this sort of stuff because it's been set on fire and thrown out the window and landed in the mud. But maybe a small portion, maybe a little dabble, just for a bit of optionality. Interesting. So in today's episode, we're going to be going through these different buckets. We're going to be talking about core compounders. We're going to be talking about income and stability options. We're going to be talking about cyclicals and underpriced assets. And if we've got time, we might throw in one or two crazy left field, completely uncertain ideas that Peter and I have had a gander at and gone, hey, maybe this time next year we'll all be millionaires. So let's get into it. I can see Peter shaking his head already.
I'm already shaking my head, mate, because I'm thinking, how long are we staying on this podcast for? That sounds like a lot of stuff we're cramming in the next hour or so, folks.
We're
It's going to be a
gonna.
marathon. But people have got bank holidays, haven't they, Henry? And
I
so on and so
do.
forth. Easter break. So you might have time to listen to this in two bites, but I'm going to try and keep this for the to an hour-ish. Henry, 90 minutes is a long time. We're not doing a
I
football match,
expect
come
to see Mr. Sloth sending us a picture of his Sunday lunch, his Easter lamb, listening to the Twin Peaks. I'll be
Yeah,
watching out
yeah,
for
yeah. Yeah,
Right,
we will see
so
about that.
core
Do you
compounders, bucket number one.
bucket number one, compounders, Henry. The thing about compounders for me, and I think there's a misunderstanding with some people, is that they look for compounders and they start with, oh, the compounder's got to be a stock which has got the highest yield. I think that's a big mistake, and it was touched on by Dr. Cooper last week that you shouldn't be going down the route of chasing high yield because you end up getting your fingers burnt regarding that. And you and I have experienced that personally ourselves in the sense of some of the infrastructure and renewables investments that we picked up in 2023, 2024 just didn't deliver. The yield was there, but the actual performance of the stock undermined the yield to the point of negativity and lower returns, and the share prices kept going lower and lower and lower. Until they decided not even to pay the dividend, never mind cut it, which is what's happening with certain investment trusts and infrastructure and renewables at the moment. So for me, a compounder that I held way, way back, but I don't hold now, I would suggest one that almost, I think possibly one in four people, just under one in four, actually use this company. Yeah, for one thing or the other, and maybe just for their groceries. It's a boring, stodgy company, which other people go, oh, I don't want to be. There's no excitement there. I don't see everybody talking about this on X. It's not exciting. I haven't got that guru there talking about it, and that guru over there recommending it. And I don't see all the fund managers talking about it like this is the go-to stock. Those are often the stocks that outperform the go-to starry-eyed, dizzy jazz hand stocks over the long term, right? So my somewhat boring first safety compound stock suggestion, Henry, is none other. Are you ready for this, mate?
Go on, go on.
None other, Henry, than Tesco's. You weren't expecting that from me, were you?
Tesco, the
Peter Boring
supermarket.
idiot.
Okay.
The
Have they gone
supermarket.
into cold fusion or,
No,
curry
they've not.
cancer
They've
or?
not. I'm not talking about AI. I'm not talking about tech. I'm not talking about anything. I'm talking about a stock that's going to be around, that's not going to go out of business, that's not going to say to you tomorrow something that's going to cause the share price, hopefully, to fall by 50% in a day.
That's a fair point.
Because one in four people, regardless of their financial circumstances, are using Tesco's every day and every week for something. Yeah, whether that be for their groceries, their pet insurance, their own personal insurance. I'm not sure they're still doing the stuff with the phones, but I think they're still doing even stuff with, your
Yeah, they
mobile
used to
phone,
sell
Tesco
SIM
Mobile.
card. Yeah, I'd forgotten.
They've got their pockets in so many different pies. I'm not going to waste my time talking about Tesco's to you, ladies and gents, wherever you are in the world, because you should know who Tesco's are and different things that make up the pie regarding what they're involved in, right? Today's share price, Henry, is £4.73. The market cap for the company is 30 billion. Yeah. Today, the share price is at 1.4%, rising six, nearly 7 pence. Yeah. Now, listen to the yield on this one, Henry, right? Somebody say, oh, I'm not interested in that. 2.9% is the current yield on the share, right? This is after, Henry, it's outperformed every single REIT out there and renewables in the past 12 months by returning 42% in the past 12 months, plus giving you a yield of 2.9. So that's a 44/45% return on Tesco's, Henry. Sorry for those people that are listening with the headphones on. Apologies.
I am going to challenge that figure. You've
Challenge
cherry-picked
what you want in a minute.
slightly.
Let me finish, young man. Right? So last April, share price at £3.10. Last month, in the 20th of February, it was £5.08. So it's not that far from its height. It's drifted off a little bit in the past month because of all the shenanigans that's been going on. Right? 3-year total annualized returns compounding at 25.53%. As I said, it's had a really bumper year in the past 12 months. 25.53%. 5-year CAGR, which is what you should be looking for. Total returns, 5 years is a midpoint is 5 years if you want a compounder. Obviously, you want more than that. 17.7%, Henry. Okay. Proper long-termers hold the stock for 10 years plus. Okay. 10 years return, 9.74%. Not bad. Slow, steady, little snail. 9.7 compounded over the last 10 years. So let's say I don't know the maths as to when they changed it to 20K. I haven't got that in my head. Apologies for the ISA. But let's just say for the past 10 years, the ISA was 20,000 pounds. Okay. And you put all of that, you shouldn't ever put all of your what ISA into one stock unless you're really confident, by the way. Right. And that's bearing in mind that some
Got
people have
another
got
word for
passed.
that.
Yes. Don't gamble. But you can use, choose your own word. So if you put 20,000 into that Tesco's at the beginning of April, 10 years ago, that 20,000 now, slowly but surely, sleeping at night, not waiting for it to say it's gone out of business and it shuts its doors and it's gone into administration. That £20,000, ladies and gents, today would now be worth £53,000, 819 and 62 pence. Not a
Very
bad
good.
return for a sleepy stock that's just doing the business, getting about it, going about its business. And the reason I'm mentioning that one as a compounder and the reason why I'm thinking it could actually carry on doing the do is A, because of its size, A, because of its buying power. Yeah. And some people might say, actually, Pete, given what's going on in the world, people's incomes are being stretched, the cost of living is going up. They might shop at different shops and go down to other shops that are might possibly be a bit cheaper. That's a really good argument. The other thing that may be in their favor, and this can be contradicted as well, is that they've got a vast network of petrol pumps. Right? And right now, the fuel that they booked 3 months ago, a year ago, they're selling at another 15, 20% more, that bear with me, than they were able to sell it at the beginning of Feb. So
We're
that might
going to
bump them. And
start a
you know
riot
what?
in the feedback section here.
The counter to that would be, well, they do a lot of online delivery, Pete. So therefore, they've got a fleet of vehicles, and that the price of that might have gone up for the people that are driving and also the fuel that they use. But I don't know if they use electric vehicles, whether they've got their own source of renewable cheap energy or not. But that's counter that. So for me, and I know you're chomping at the bit to get to slag this one off, Henry. But for me, the compounder that I would choose, slow, steady, and possibly, hopefully, it generates not the 17% for the next 5 years, but even if it compounds at the 9.7/10% for the next 5 years, is not a bad return in what could be a very, very volatile and difficult market, given the world order is possibly changing going forward. So that's why I'm going for safety, Henry. I don't think I've ever spoken about Tesco's on this podcast before. Tesco's would be my first choice. And I've also chosen it because I don't own it. I could have gone and banged on about legal in general and blah, but I own that stock. So that's why I'm not talking about it. Go on, Henry. Rip it to shreds
I
as you
like
normally
it.
do.
No, I like it. I like it. This falls perfectly into the compounding category.
So why were
The
you
wolf.
making faces when I started talking about it then?
Because you've also cherry-picked the absolute bottom of the 2025 crash to pick the 12-month returns. So you've got back, if you'd gone about 2 weeks earlier, it was a lot higher. It had a big crash at the 25.
I hadn't even tried that, but if you say so, all right.
So the only reason I know that is that I'm looking at ShareScope and I've got a 5 year sorry, a 6 year pricing screen up. So it gives me 5 years of history and then 26.
Right, okay,
And
I'll let you off.
obviously, if you pick the bottom of
I
each
haven't,
year's
I've not,
range.
mate, I've not even got the brain capacity to even think like that.
So,
But so carry on.
other than that, I'll let you off. But no, Peter, you're absolutely right. This is what you want from a compounder. You want something with a durable economic brand to it, right?
The word, Dr. George Cooper, is resilient.
Resilient. We like it. And
Resilience, yes.
Tesco, you know, that statistic, one in four people in the UK touch Tesco one way or another. Geez, now that is a moat and a half. Now, fine, you can argue about Aldi and Lidl nibbling bits of the grocery market, and you can argue about Vodafone nibbling bits of the telecoms market and HSBC taking credit card customers, but they have got so much breadth and such a trusted brand, such a great franchise, that this is the sort of thing we're looking for in a compounder. And you can see it in the results. I mean, from the bottom of the COVID lows, when shares were, I would, in fact, they looked like they were under 150 there, maybe 125 right at the bottom.
Wowza.
And they're now up at, they've hit a recent high of £5 a share.
Yeah, sub 150. Wow.
So this is the sort of return that, admittedly, year one, loses 3.4%. COVID, not great. Year two, we'd still got a bit of COVID going on. Shares, they had a rough time, down 22%.
As did most
At this
shares, yeah.
point, you might be thinking, God, why the hell did I buy this? But if you'd stuck with it as a compounding machine, it then goes on to perform. That brand starts to kick in. 30% return, 25% return, 20% return last year, 7% this year, in a year when most of the FTSE is having a rough time right now. This company is still up year to date 7%. I wish my portfolio was up 7% year to date. And this is the point behind having these long-term durable compounders in your ISA. You know, you want something that's steady, that's stable, that's dependable, that gives you a bit of ballast and isn't yin-yanging around all over the place, because you can't get those long-term returns if your portfolio is dropping 20% one year and then you're trying to claw it back the next. So I
Absolutely.
do quite like Peter, I think.
Okie
Fits
doke. Do, do.
the bucket perfect.
Okie doke. Do you shop there anyway? Was the last time waiting for Tesco's, mate, other than for your sandwich?
I do. Well, actually, I shop at Waitrose now, but if you could make a stereotype,
Not making
apologies
any
to Mr.
stereotypes,
Stop.
mate.
But we used to shop at Tesco when we lived in Canada Water because we had one round the corner
Ah.
from us.
Okie dokie.
And I
Okie
do
dokie.
like them, actually. I do like them as a brand. My Christmas tree is from Tesco. We've still got our little Christmas tree that we bought when we first moved into our flat in Canada Water. And
There you
I'm
go.
loath to get rid of it. I've got very fond memories of buying it in the first place.
There you go. Durable, 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 durable.
Exactly.
Just change the baubles,
So,
mate.
I'll see your Tesco and I will give you one slightly smaller, not a 30 billion market. You took me aback
Okay.
slightly with the size of that. I didn't realize they were so big.
Yes, yeah. They're a big old group.
So mine is a slightly smaller company. It is a ventilation products business that supplies ventilation products such as air fans, basically air conditioning units, to
Yep.
residential and commercial products.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
The brands, they've got a range of brands, which, you know, unless you work in the construction industry, probably won't mean a lot to you. But they operate globally. So the UK, Europe, and Australasia. So they're not just tied to the UK construction industry. They are Volution Group. And they're one of these businesses that's got a fantastic ticker. The ticker is FAN, FAN. which I just thought was wonderful for a ventilation business, but maybe that's
Clever,
just my
yeah.
sense of humor. Now, the reason I've put this into the compounding category, they've got great margins and historically strong returns on cash returns on capital, 17% last year. So they've got a durable economic business. And it's quite a highly regulated industry. Where you tend to have air conditioning units installed, it tends to be highly regulated, air quality, building standards. You can't just go slapping these things around willy-nilly and hoping for the best. And because of that, you tend to get recurring demand from both new fit builders and retrofit developers because they know that Volution's business products are regulated. They know that they've passed those regulation tests and they know that they can use them and that they last for a long period of time. And so you tend to get customers coming back again and again and again and using those same business, using those same products. Now, how does it grow, you might ask? Well, it's got a business model that is being talked about quite a lot. One of our recent guests, Charlie Huggins, has recently been talking about bolt-on acquisition businesses. If you go and visit his blog or his Substack, you will see he's written a couple of articles about these bolt-on acquisition type businesses, and this is one of them. They go around the market, they buy niche specialist product manufacturers, they bring them into the whole, they then sell those products across their entire customer base using their marketing and distribution network to expand the footprint of the products. Now, the business has done terrifically well. They released results recently, half year results, showing revenue growth of 21% year on year, operating profit up 21% year on year, and earnings per share up 19% year on year. So this business is doing very, very well. And this is the sort of business that I think falls quite nicely into the compounding category. It's not based on yield. I think it's only got a 2% dividend yield. It's based on fundamental business growth, fundamental business returns. And this is what you want from your compounders. You want a business that's going to do well through thick and thin, that's diversified geographically, has a broad customer base, and can weather long-term economic cycles to give you dependable returns over many, many years. So I'm going to put Volution Group into the mix. Any thoughts, Peter?
Let's start on the positive, Henry.
Go on.
I know you missed a bit out there, which I thought would have been really, really important. Fantastic company, very acquisitive, which I often think sometimes I'm waiting for one of them acquisitions to go wrong, but
Go
they seem to
wrong,
have
yeah.
got the measure of what to do and where to do it and how to do it. They've got a price point and they're going, let's see if we can entice those owners to actually sell to us and enhance what they're doing and enhance what we're doing going forward and enhance the EPS. But the bit that you missed out, Henry, regarding strength and confidence about them, was I've only just found it here, is a dividends per share plus 18%. It's in front of you there,
I had
right?
missed that. Yep.
Yeah, plus 18% as a dividend. Henry and I often talk about it on here, right? Dividends are important, but not going for high yield, right? You're looking for the overall performance over the whole of the year. However, Henry just said the dividend yield on this particular company right now is only a mere 2%. If they're able to grow at the current rate and able to increase the dividend per share by 18% this year, if they're able to continue that for only the next 4 years, just the next 4 years, all of a sudden that price point that you bought it at today is generating from your previous purchase price, your first purchase price, a yield of suddenly 4% on your first acquisition price of shares. Now, wouldn't that be nice in 4 years' time to think, actually, the share price has gone up incrementally, say 5, 10, 15%, but now it's yielding from my purchase point then in 2026, March 23rd, 31st, 2% is now yielding 4 years later, essentially 4% on what I purchased it at. Yeah. That to me is a very, very important point for people to consider. Oh, it's only 2%, but what's it actually growing the divvy at? It might turn out that this year is just a one-off that they can afford to give it 18%. It may not.
But if you average that over, you could average that over 5 years, you could average that over
Absolutely.
10, and it's still a good rate of
It's still
increase.
a good, absolutely. If they fall back next year and give only 5% between the 2 years, that's not bad, is it?
It
Yeah.
does a lot of heavy lifting. And this is the thing
Absolutely.
about
So
compounders, you need to give them the time. They get stronger
you
with
need,
time.
that is, it can't be, it can't, it's not a compounder if you're not holding it beyond 3, 4, 5 years, Henry. So that's a really, really good point for me. The thing that concerns me, and I've tried my best to just ease my way out of, I still see this as a construction related stock, almost a housing, although it's beyond housing, it's in everywhere, and the office space is where they're basically at regarding, air conditioning. A lot of people have that air cons in the houses, although some people have. This is a construction related bit, and they've got to go in and do the bit in the offices. I think it's mainly, I'm not sure how, what percentage of their revenue is from offices. I still see it as a construction play. So that to me makes it a bit more cyclical, Henry. I could be wrong. But super smart regarding acquisitions. You need that because it only takes one of them to go wrong, and you all of a sudden the chain of events that can lead to write downs, all sorts of things. And the fact that they've been slowly just doing these little bolt-ons to me is a really, really big positive. The only little asterisk I'm putting on that is my thing about what's happening with construction and how many new offices are going to be built. They're going in doing the replacements, by the way, Henry. Yeah. And these things have to be replaced. They have to be serviced. So that could be generating a lot of revenue for them. But also, there's other parts of the world I suspect that they're going to be looking at and be intrigued by if they're not already, applying themselves to global markets beyond the UK. I don't know. Don't know enough about
Well,
the company.
they are well diversified. I mean, the UK makes up less than 40% of their sales.
Well, there you go.
Australia is
There you go.
18%. They're in the
That's what I
Netherlands,
wanted to
New
hear.
Zealand,
You didn't tell me
Sweden.
that bit, did you? That's what I'm trying to find
And
out. How
they are
diversified,
multinational. Yeah, they are
multinational
multinational.
company. So that to me makes that a really, really good company to look at. I'll ask you this question though, Henry, right? And I'm using the midpoint regarding long term. I would only class 5 years as long term, to be fair. How have they performed over 5 years as a compounder? Do you have
So
anything in front of you?
their 5-year compound annual growth rate is 7.6%. So
7.6%.
they've not blown the
Yep.
lights out.
Yep.
That annual return is 9.2. So that's the capital value plus the dividend, which is
Yep.
slightly more
Yeah. Yep.
respectable. Now on both of those metrics, they've slightly underperformed the UK market, but they had a very bad 2022. Shares were down 34%, and that's impacted them.
Wow.
If you
Yeah. That's
look
going to take
at,
a lot out of the sales. Yep.
this year as well, they're down 12%. They've been hit by the market sell-off pretty hard. That's
Yeah.
despite these excellent trading updates. And so this is where I'm thinking, if we talk about buying at the bottom of the range, maybe this is the bottom of the range for this year. Might not be, by the way,
It might be, mate. And equally, given what's going on in the world right now, and individuals needing to be in offices and having to work back at the workplace. It can only improve their margins going forward that more and more people actually want to be in a comfortable environment to work in,
Exactly.
given the fact that, work can be a difficult place at the best of times. You want to be cool, calm and collected and not in a horrible building, which is, got the wrong temperatures at the wrong time and, stuffy and people coughing and sputtering everywhere. So yeah, good call, mate. I like that one. Love the ticker symbol, by the
Yeah,
way. If
amazing.
I'm not sure who the marketing person or the PR person or the whatever the person was, but he or she absolutely. What do we do? We do aircon. What do they work from? Fans. Ooh, I wonder if we can get the ticker for FAN. Get in there.
We are fans of the fan.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right, let's take a little break here, Henry. We're going to talk about the lovely Just Giving page that we've been running. We've not had much chance to talk about it for the last couple of months. We are currently sitting, Henry, at 1470. We are raising money in honor of our dear now departed, lost friend of Mark Bentley of ShareSoc fame, who was working on shareholders' rights and everything else relating to looking out for what shareholders are entitled to, not having certain individual companies taking advantages of shareholders and so on and so forth. So I'm talking about Mark Bentley, of course, and we are there at 1470 so far. We've had some really great donations so far. I'm going to whistle through some of these, Henry. You and I have already donated. So I'm going to start with Karen by the Sea. I think we've already mentioned Karen. Rest in peace, Mark, a lovely man, donated £20. Reg Hoare, MHP, donated £50. May Mark's memory be a blessing, and donated £50. Sanjay Korea, Peter and Henry, thank you for everything you do for the investing community. It's always appreciated. And Sanjay donated, let me get the details up here. I think it was £50. Have I got it right here? Oh, sorry, £100. And then we'll go to Matt Raitt, who donated £50. Listen to the podcast every week and think you guys do a great show. Keep up the good work. Yeah, we have mentioned this before because he mentioned us asking for speed. Could we cover speedy hire? We still haven't done that for him, Henry. We might need to look at that another time. Following the Velocity business plan reaching the end of its enabled phase. Kevin and Joanne Taylor donated £500. Fantastic, Kevin and Joanne. Thank you very much. In memory of a top guy, he worked tirelessly to improve shareholders' rights, fought tooth and nail against the establishment to get money for investors. Gone too early. Peter M. I don't know Mark, but everyone says great things about him. Very fitting charity to set up in his name. Donated £50. Leon Boros, a good friend of Mark, donated £100 as well. Honoured to know him. He will sadly be missed. And more recently, I've not covered everyone's name here. I'll cover some more later on. Dave Summers, just 2 days ago, donated £100. Didn't know Mark, but it's clear that he'll sadly be missed by all who came into contact with him. And we are raising this money, ladies and gents, for in honour of Mark, should I say, for the financial education inclusion campaign. And this is to help with financial education in schools in difficult communities and to ensure that everyone gets an education regarding that. So it's FT Flick that you can find the actual information about. And that's who Henry and I are raising money for, so they can go into the schools and educate everybody that needs it to enable them to become more financially, use the word again, Henry, resilient going forward. So that's what we're working on. Hopefully you guys can support us. Please make a donation if you possibly can at www.justgiving.com/page Twin Peaks Investing Podcast 2026. Anything you want to add there, Henry?
Yeah, I feel like we've skated over FT Flick a little bit, and I just wanted to go into a little bit more detail about what they do. Okay. If you have a look at their website, which is very good, by the way, it's ftflick.com, that's ftflic.com. You might not know this, but most young people in the UK don't actually receive any meaningful financial education. They get maths lessons and, you know, that's about it. They understand how currency works. That's about it. You know, going to a shop and pay for something. They don't understand credit cards. They don't understand borrowing or mortgages or investment or interest rates. They're just not taught it. And recent research shows that there are 23 million adults in the UK that have poor financial literacy, which is quite shocking. Correct. Considering that we've only got a population of about 60 million. I think it's a bit over 60, 65, something like that. But you can, broadly speaking, say, therefore, that a third of the country has poor financial education. They don't understand how to manage their finances, how to cope with their finances. And this is such a key life skill. You know, most people listening to this podcast will take it for granted that they understand how a bank account works, how credit cards work, how to invest. We've probably got if you averaged it, it's probably some of the most well-educated, most financially literate people in the country listening to this podcast, if a third of the country have no education at all. An FT flip really is about trying to change that statistic. So their mission, in their own words, is to make learning, managing your money, as common as learning to ride a bicycle. And I think it's just fantastic. You know, in this day and age, you wouldn't walk back and say, "Oh, I don't know how to ride a bike. I never taught." We all know. I hope we all do. But it's somehow okay to say, "I don't understand how money works." You know, FT Flick is promoting financial literacy where it's needed the most to have a significant, sustainable societal impact. It's about trying to create a rigorous grounding in the basic building blocks of financial life for young people to stop them falling into that 23 million people statistic, you know, when they're still at school, developing content to educate, lobbying for policy change with the government, improving the way that financial firms communicate with all of us as customers, and collecting data and conducting research to better understand where these gaps in financial literacy are in the country and what their causes. And so the money that we're raising for FT Flip will go towards changing that statistic for millions of people going forwards. You know, and this
Absolutely.
is something that Mark Bentley, he was passionate about. He spent his life, you know, working towards this goal through ShareSoc, through supporting private investor networks, through just spending time with us. And this is a way that we can honour not only his memory, but make a meaningful difference to communities up and down the UK and millions of people, helping them learn a key life skill. So if you can donate, please, please do consider it. Again, a reminder, the page is justgiving.com/page/TwinPeaksInvestingPodcast2026.
Absolutely spot on, Henry. Thank you for adding some weight to that as well. Appreciate it. Where should we go next, Henry? Where would you like to dive next to?
Well, diving back into the ISA, we've only got one of the
Okay.
four buckets covered here. So I think listeners are
We might have to just cut to three buckets, mate. We're going to be here
we're
all night, but
we're going to
let's see how
canter.
fast you can move. Go
We're
on.
going to canter.
Now you're
So
slow, you know.
hold on to your seats, ladies and gents, because we're talking about income and stability next. And this is my favorite bit of investing, right? I love getting my dividend checks. It's the thing that got me investing in the first place. I wanted those dividend checks. This is looking at yield, it's looking at asset backing, it's looking at predictable cash flows. And only this week, I was challenged on X by one of my followers, who I believe is listening to the podcast. Henry, you used to talk about something called REITs all the time, real estate investment trusts.
Oh, I can
What's
feel
gone
the.
wrong?
I love the fact that we don't rehearse these things and plan and script these things because I just makes me laugh sometimes when you say some things and you've been challenged because I get challenged all the time. Come on, I'm all ears, mate. Go for it.
So the short answer, why don't I talk about REITs a lot anymore? The short answer is that a lot of the REIT investments I made didn't really perform as well as I hoped, but they did perform at a very key company.
Likewise.
So I know Peter got smacked in the eye,
Yeah, I've got the
same as
bruises
me.
still, mate. Got the bruises still.
But they do play a role in your portfolio. They're income generating assets, and they are fantastic
Yeah.
income generating assets. Now there are two I'm going to talk about today. The first is one I don't hold either of these actually, but I do like the look of both of them. The first is Primary Health Properties, tickers PHP. They're engaged in making investments in integrated healthcare properties. They acquire, they develop properties, they manage medical facilities, they act as a landlord and a tenant, they're an asset manager, and they also provide financing management. Now, basically, what is a REIT? It's a real estate investment trust. It's a large portfolio of properties that's held within a vehicle, a REIT, that generates rental income and hopefully capital growth, and returns that in the form of dividends every year to shareholders. Now, the reason they make such a great income generating asset is that by law, REITs have to return something like, I think it's 85% of their annual income back to shareholders every year in order to qualify for REIT status. So if they don't do that, they can't call themselves a REIT. So if they generate the income, it's coming back to you in the form of dividends. Now, why do I like primary healthcare properties? Well, it's got long-term government-backed rental incomes. We've got a huge medical estate in the UK in the form of the NHS. It needs somewhere to be housed. These doctors, nurses, dentists, etc., rent properties from primary health properties, and that income then comes to you as the shareholder. They've got extremely high tenant quality, therefore, and this is important with REITs. You don't want people like me and Peter wandering in and going, I'll give you 50p for the month, and then wandering back out the door when we want a pint of Guinness and not coming back. You want somebody that you know is going to pay the rent month after month after month. They can afford it, no worries. You want long-term leases, right? You want somebody that says, I'm going to take that building and I'm going to take it for 10 years. And if you need to put costs up slightly because of inflation, they can bear that increase in costs. Primary healthcare properties is such a business, very, very defensive. And again, they've had some big news recently, actually. They recently combined with another healthcare type entity called Assura, that's Assura, to create a £6 billion healthcare REIT invested in critical social infrastructure assets across the UK and Ireland. Now, their immediate focus after this acquisition, after this merger, is on delivering post-transaction objectives of reducing leverage, i.e., reducing their debt, delivering 9 million of annualized synergies across the two estates. So, this is about reducing maintenance costs, reducing administration costs, improving margins, and integrating the two businesses to achieve the best of organizations. And in a short space of time, in their latest update, they seem to be ahead of schedule. They've delivered over 80% of the annualized transaction synergies and generated net rental income growth of 49% and an astonishing increase in profit after tax of 190% in their latest update.
Say that bit again, Henry.
Profit after tax increased 190%.
Wowza.
And this is from a slow, sleepy property.
And that's from the synergies and the merger between the both of them, and that's pretty
Exactly.
amazing.
So
All
this
the
is a big
NHS is all the NHS is overpaying them. Carry
Take
on. Sorry,
your
I interrupt. I interrupt.
back your horses. But this is a big business that I love. And alongside this, I'm going to throw just quickly another REIT into the mix, which I used to own. I don't now, mainly because I consolidated into another name in the sector. But it's Tritax Big Box REIT. They
Oh,
own
everyone's
large-scale
favorite.
logistics warehouses, leased to
Yep.
major corporates, retailers,
Massive.
distributors. And again, you tend to have long leases on those warehouses, high-quality tenants, think Amazon, rental growth that's linked to inflation, and strong structural demand from e-commerce and logistics. So again, this tends to be, in my camp, what would make a fairly good income type asset for your ISA. Any thoughts, Peter?
I've got a lot of love for Tritax. I used to hold it many moons ago. It's a fantastic company, solid, dependable, diversified, got some great tenants. I think there was a deal, forget who it was now, one of the large, big behemoth,
BlackRock.
BlackRock came in and took a stake. So that underpins everything going forward. And I'm not sure you've mentioned it or looked into it, but I think with that investment, some of the big box used to be just, boxes that weren't doing anything. I have a feeling that they're going to diversify into data centers. Just got an inkling. And if they start talking about AI data centers and da 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 da, and utilizing some of their warehouses for not just warehousing, but data centers, I think that could be an actual catalyst for them and their share price to take another push higher. So of the two, I would be favoring that absolute underpinning via, that large behemoth stakeholder. Is there a risk that actually they take them over full stop rather than taking a stake? Could be another move. Primary healthcare after the Assura one, there was a bit of doubt as to how quickly they would get those synergies moving, Henry. And I had to ask you twice. Well, I asked you to repeat and say twice. that 190% figure. I'm like, sorry, what? Because
It's astonishing.
is it a year ago they've got Assura, or is it a bit longer, 18 months?
I'm
But to
not even
get that
sure
sort of
it's that long.
synergy drip into the bottom line immediately tells you what tells you something crazy regarding the synergies, the overlaps, and two smart CEOs, CFOs getting together and saying, let's do this. This makes financial sense for both of our entities to go that way. So fantastic return on an acquisition there already. And it's not one I've looked at, Henry. And if you're saying that over the past, few years, it's not done as well compounding wise, then the catalyst could be starting. If they're doing that sort of return immediately on acquisition, people are sitting there and probably didn't see those sort of numbers already into them because it's them. They've not done so well over the past 10 years. I'm not even going to look at what the results are. Because if you look down into the granular, which I know you love to do, those results there are staggering, mate.
No, they are
It could be
astonishing. And I think
a sleeping giant. That's 6 billion market cap. NHS is in a situation that it's in now, which doesn't seem to be going to be improving anytime soon. They could be one of the beneficiaries of actually helping the NHS to become more efficient going forward and get rewarded accordingly for it. So yeah, I like both of them. I like both of them. Don't force me to choose one. Although I did say probably Tritax. But they're both high quality. The injuries I've suffered going into REITs and the reason why I don't hold any of them anymore. I've gone the opposite way and gone for a listed entity that does some of what PHP do, primary healthcare do. And I was looking for a premier, some of parts. I looked at it, it's worth £2.80 all day long. Got it at sub 150. Yeah. Averaged up a little bit the price. Got takeover offer, rubbing my hands together. Yeah. Two bidders walked away. Share price is now down below where I purchased it at. And I'm sitting there going, not a problem. Give it 6 months, give it a year. So I've got Spire Healthcare, Henry. I have to look at my prices actually regarding where I bought it at. But yeah, Spire Healthcare I've got in that space. And I was looking for the takeover to happen, but 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago now. It's not happened. But I didn't just buy it for the takeover.
Is
I
a
bought it for
brutal
their.
price chart. I've just pulled up this chart.
Yeah, it's horrible. Horrible in the past month. I love it when my stocks cause you to laugh and take the mickey. Anyway, it's a horrible price chart. But I'm sitting here, I still hold it. I'm not gone, oh yeah, I sold it 2 weeks ago. Oh, I sold it on the day that the warning happened. No, none of that. I still hold it. I didn't just buy it for a takeover, I bought it for it to grow and da-da-da. So we'll see what happens. Give it 6 months to a year, we'll see what happens. But two fantastic stocks there, Henry. Yeah. I will throw my third in there. So if you need one on the bench, consider Spire Healthcare. But I haven't talked about it because it as a recommendation because I already own it.
You're still
Right.
mopping up the blood from the nosebleed when you fell off the cliff.
Ouch. You just love it, don't you? Love it with the jabs. You've been going to
Mate,
the gym
look,
too often, mate.
you can pick holes in my portfolio all day long, mate.
Oh dear. Right, Henry. I have got this stock now. We've spoken about this stock before when we talked about defense stocks, but defense in the real sense of military and militarization stocks. And this stock is currently unloved. It's gone off the boil a little bit, Henry. And I think given where we are in the state of play and the fact that the EU nations and the NATO nations are going to have to rearm, going forward, I think this stock could do okay. It is already up 59.9% in the past 12 months, but hasn't done so well of late. It's a 5.7 billion market cap company. I'm talking about Babcock, ladies and gentlemen. Babcock
Ah.
International, ticker symbol BAB. United Kingdom-based international defence, aerospace and security company. The company provides a range of products and services solution to enhance its customers' defence capabilities and critical assets. It operates in four segments: marine, nuclear, land and aviation, all of which are in play right now. And given where we are with the energy crisis, nuclear could be something that we could be adding to our you know, energy and defence systems. Anyway, so that's why I'm talking about that particular stock. As I said, it's global, operates in Australia, Australasia, Canada, France, and obviously the UK. 52-week share price range of £6. Yeah, £6. High of 15.27. Currently sitting at £11.58. PE is a bit tasty at 20.7, but you'd expect it regarding that sort of company. And given what they've done over the last 2 years, yield is absolutely tiny, Henry, of 0.6%. But given it's last year, it did 60% nearly, you're not going to be bothered about the yield. So, yeah, interestingly enough, it appears, Henry, and I'm always looking for signs. That's the reason why it's rolled over. You might be able to pull it up there. But the 23rd of January, they came up with an update. Yeah.
CEO retirement.
And say again?
CEO retired on the 23rd.
Yes. Third quarter trading update. That's exactly what I've got in front of me here, Henry. So they said on the 23rd of the 1st, CEO David Lockwood would retire at the end of 2026 after almost 5 years in the job. Now, 5 years before he joined, the stock wasn't doing so great. The last 5 years have been doing reasonably well, recovered somewhat. And now he's going, right? Former army officer, Harry Holt, currently the head of the company's nuclear division, who has been on various senior roles since November, will be taking up that slot. He spent 7 years at Rolls-Royce as well. The number of roles, including president of its nuclear division, will be taking up the role of CEO. So, could be interesting. I'm not quite sure how it's going to work out. But essentially, the results for third quarter were still reasonably good. And it said, you know, to give you a summary of it, reported strong trading for the 9 months ending December the 31st, 2025, with good organic revenue growth and underlying operating margin progression, reinforcing confidence in meeting full-year margin target of 8%. Significant strategic developments, including being selected as the prime industrial partner for Indonesia's $4 billion pound maritime partnership program and signing an agreement for two further Harrowhead 140 licenses. The company also expanded its partnership with H11 to support the US Virginia class nuclear submarine program and launched the Armor Force Initiative for Autonomous Maritime Operations. The group has returned 90 million of its 200 million share buyback program and expects to complete by the year end, March end. Interestingly, Henry, given the stats I've given you, we're talking about compounders still, and it's only a small dividend. 3 year annualized on Babcock, 57.4%. 5 year annualized, 36.96%. Now, the 10 year, given the fact that the former CEO was there for the past five, he's thinking, has things gone as good as I can? I'm getting out whilst the going's good. The 10-year annualized, 3.26, a little measly 3.26, Henry. And that £20,000, if you were allowed to hold £20,000 each year for the past 10 years, and that would return a paltry, I'm going to say paltry because it's not that much, £27,696.06. Extra 7.6K over 10 years. Doesn't sound a lot, does it? You'd have had more put in for 5 years, the last 5 years, and compounding it over five than you would have had doing the same amount over time. Anyway.
I used to own Babcock. The reason I don't anymore is it was not really a great business. You know, you go back to pre-issues with Russia.
Excuse me.
Share price hasn't performed. And then all of a sudden, 2023, it starts to take off. You've got a 40% return. 25% return, 150% return. And I think part of this is enthusiasm around defense without
Good
necessarily,
stuff.
and I suspect I'm going to get some contradictions from Matt here, but without necessarily understanding the intricacies of the business. I mean, one of the reasons I wasn't that keen on holding Babcock long term was because it's contract based. So they get a large chunk of money from the government to say build 10 ships. They go and build these ships, and hopefully the things don't sink when they're out at sea, or the reactors don't collapse, or whatever. But as we've just seen with an American aircraft carrier, years can go by, and then all of a sudden the laundry facilities explode and catch fire. And who's on the hook for it? Well, I mean, not in the case of the aircraft carrier, but if Babcock built the aircraft carrier, it's Babcock. And so they can accrue these liabilities that are really quite significant without necessarily knowing what the outcome's going to be. And so I'm a little wary around Babcock, if I'm honest. And it's the same with
Okay, that's
BAE.
fair enough. And they could have had their purple patch, mate. That's the last 5 years could have had been their purple patch regarding growth and accelerants, because the CEO is now going, I'm going to move on to next pastures. It's only been there 5 years and he's already
I've
moving
sent
on.
all the
Most
ships
CEOs.
out. They'll figure out the plugs come out in a couple of months.
It could well be that. Who knows, mate? Who knows? But yeah, the fact that he's going could be something to consider. But yeah, I just think as the world is changing and the rearming of the EU countries having to spend more, and also NATO having to spend more going forward, possibly it could be it, the theme could continue regarding that. That's why I'm looking at it. But yeah, it's a difficult one. But yeah, I always like things that have always like to look at the opportunity of a stock in a sense of, has it peaked? Has it not peaked? Has it got another catalyst coming forward for it? So that's why I'm considering that one. It's come off the boil a little bit. But if you're having the same conversation, people saying, oh, if you had to choose between Babcock and Rolls-Royce, people are probably going to choose Rolls-Royce, aren't they? Because it just keeps going and keeps going and keeps going. It doesn't seem to, it's like looking behind Babcock going, come on, catch up, mate. But I'd rather have the Babcock that's going to have an accelerant at some point and take off rather than the one that's already lapped Babcock at least a couple of times. That's just me being a
I
bit
agree.
contrarian.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code Twin Peaks. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
And this, I mean, these companies that we're discussing here, these actually, by sheer coincidence, ladies and gentlemen, fall into our final two buckets, really, which are the mispriced, temporarily mispriced opportunities. So when you're looking at your ISA and you've got this 20,000 or whatever sum you're putting in, maybe there's one or two things in the market, and you think maybe it's not a great quality business. Maybe it's not got that 10% return on capital employed. Maybe it's accruing liabilities that we can't see in the future. Maybe this isn't something I want to hold for 10 years. But maybe there's some upside in it. Maybe it's Spire Healthcare, and maybe, just maybe, this thing might get close to £3 share price, I think it's worth, than the £1.50 the market's currently got it priced at. And so maybe you want to allocate a little bit of your capital, 5, 10% towards some of these more speculative names. And so, as a quick fire last round, I'm going to throw a name in the ring for me. I'm going to throw a name at Peter, and then I'm going to ask Peter to throw a name in for some speculative, maybe temporarily mispriced ideas. So my name is Ashmore. Ticker, in fact, I've completely forgotten what the ticker is. Hold on. Let's have a quick look.
SHM, I think, Henry.
S A S H M.
Yep.
ASHM, Ashmore Group. I could have guessed
Yep.
that, but I didn't want to. It's an investment manager focused on emerging market debt and equities. Now, we've talked about investment managers on this show before, so I'm not going to go through the mechanics of how they're priced and valued. And Ashmore is but one example. But to me, it sits in the cyclical bucket because its earnings are driven less by steady operational progress, rolling out branches, selling into new countries, and more by investor sentiment towards a very specific type of investment, in this case, emerging markets. Now, their revenues depend on assets under management, which are influenced by market performance. When markets go down, Ashmore faces headwinds no matter what they do. And critically, capital flows. When emerging markets are out of favor and everyone's stampeding towards developed markets, they've got headwinds. When the reverse is true, they've got a tailwind. And when global liquidity tightens, the dollar strengthens or risk appetites fall, money leaves emerging markets. And we've got a few of those sort of signals flashing on the dashboard at the moment, meaning that assets under management are going to be under pressure, profits could be compressing. And therefore, in theory, when conditions reverse, the opposite should occur. Assets under management should grow, profits should grow, and therefore the share price should grow. And so this makes Ashmore firmly, in my opinion, a non-linear business where earnings swing without any fundamental change in the underlying capabilities of the business. And as a result, the market often extrapolates those cycles too far. We get too bearish on the downside and too bullish on the upside. And so having a little bit of your ISA exposed to this, might pay dividends in a few years when sentiment on emerging markets turn. So I'm going to throw that one out. I'm then going to ask Peter, and I've picked this one, I've cherry-picked this one from a previous comment he made. Watchers of Switzerland Group, Peter.
Oh
I think
my
this
Lord.
falls formally into the cyclicals group. You've got a minute. Go. What's the
Before
case?
I go into that minute, just let me just throw one thing in there that was a positive for you that came out just today regarding Ashmore Group. And it's a strategic partnership that accelerate that strategic partnership accelerates Japan's post-insurance global growth strategy through an accrued allocation to emerging markets. That's a partnership between Japan Post Insurance and Ashmore Group. That could be a big, big catalyst for Ashmore going forward, Henry. So good call regarding Ashmore and potential catalyst. Watches of Switzerland. What can I say about Watches of Switzerland that I haven't said already in a minute? For me, it's more than just about the watches, Henry. It's about the jewelry market of the US and Americas and the potential growth from there. People will watch the prices of the various luxury watch brands going up and down. And currently, I would say some of them prices are going down. But for me, it's about the Americas market and beyond. And the fact that what you've got actually, if you look in and around you, wherever you are in the world, it would appear that the individuals that you would deem to be wealthy are remaining wealthy. And some of the ones that are super wealthy are getting wealthier. Yeah. And if they can afford luxury car or to buy luxury brands or to purchase a luxury watch, they are going to continue to do so. So over the next 12 months, 3 years, I suspect that the revenue and the opportunity for growth for Watches of Switzerland Group will continue. That's my 1 minute on the group. Is it cyclical? Is it the sort of stock that's going to blow the lights out going forward? Absolutely not. I don't talk about it much on this podcast. I own the stock. It's not done as well as I thought it would have done. Could it do better going forward? I think so. Yeah. Are the circumstances and environment a headwind for it? Absolutely. But could it navigate it potentially over the next 12 months despite everything else going badly? environmentally for everybody else, they could still end up eking out a decent profit, I think. I could be proven wrong. They could turn around next week and say, this has gone on and this and that gone on, and the end up with a profit warning. But yeah. So yeah, thank you for that test, Henry. I didn't expect that. But yeah, it's a stock that I own. I think it could still do okay. If they come out with a profit warning, I'll probably say, okay, circumstances have completely changed. I've read it completely wrong. I'll hold my hand up. I'll tell people on X, and I may choose to exit it. But that's what we're doing with each stock that we pick. We have got no, there's no certainties out there. We've seen profit warnings and change of circumstances. Condolences to everybody that's been impacted by it. But Future today, Future Group got smashed by, I think at one point it was down 30%. A couple of days ago, Goodwin Group smashed 50% intraday at one point. Yeah. It's happening, mate, and it's recurring. There's no such stock that can hold itself for 15, 25 years, regardless. So if you've held a stock for 5 years, I know there's a significant individual on X that's held it for 8 years, and done extremely well out of the stock, but in the past just sub less than a year, the share price has gone up a silly amount in the past 12 months up to January, December, and it's now halved that return over the past 8 years in the blink of an eye, just because of a delay. So, Goodwin's an example of a stock that, has been halved. And was it mispriced? I don't know. I wasn't watching it that closely. But you have to be mindful that some of the stocks that you've got that have done really well could get a trigger that halves it. Is it an opportunity now for other people to go and consider it? Have people have reacted to Goodwin? I don't know. And the thing is, no one does. Nobody does. And it would appear that the management don't either. So yeah, it's hard, Henry. It's hard. And every stock is one RNS away from a profit warning. Every single one of them. So Watches of Switzerland will not be any different to any one of them. Is that fair enough?
That is fair enough, mate. I
Okie
think that
dokie.
is fair enough.
Right. I was going to talk about some of the stocks, Henry. We've been on here a little while. I pulled up a chart here for FTSE 350's stocks, a picture, should I say. And I was looking at some stocks here, Henry, that I've done reasonably well over the past 3 months. And the past 3 months have been horrible for the markets, right? Horrible for the markets. So to consider, and what came up actually was what the theme is right now. And if you're buying for your ISA, you're buying for more than what happened in the last 3 months. But I'm saying this with a caveat of the theme of what's happened in the past 3 months, and the stocks that have benefited have been mainly energy related stocks. The defense stocks have rolled back. Energy related stocks have done reasonably well. These stocks, because of what their profitability was gauged at, and we'll use here, for instance, let's use WTI, right? Oil was priced at, say, $70, right? It's now nearer to 100, if not more so, for WTI. Brent's now at, I think it was looked at 119 recently, as today, from what was around 70 not so long ago. That's the price point that we're gonna achieve this in 2026. It's now gone up essentially 25%, 30% and more. So they could have a windfall on their returns. So I'm talking about, ladies and gents, go and investigate these companies. Ithaca Energy, ITH, Harbour Energy, HBR, BP, don't want to talk about that. I already own that one. Hunting, which is in the space of servicing those oil-related companies. Shell, obviously another behemoth, has done really well. And the one that not a lot of people talk about, I know some people hold it, that was written off 2 or 3 years ago, right? Is Centrica. Have a look at the performance of Centrica, another behemoth. Centrica, ticker symbol CNA, Yeah, past 3 months up 24%. Quietly squeezed up there. 3 months performance at 24. No one's talking about it.
That has done. I
Yeah.
sold that years ago, and I wish I'd not. That would have been a four bagger from where I sold it. That
Well,
was a
there you go,
great.
Henry. It was written off. It was one of them stocks that had too much debt. This is going on for it. That's wrong for it. Da, 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 da. You know, admittedly, I even looked at it a few years ago and I was like, boring, boring.
I held that
And the
for
share price.
years. I reckon I sold that just before COVID,
Well, have a look
and
at
it was
where the
down at
COVID price
50
was and
pence a
tell, well, tell
share.
me what the COVID price was, Henry, and
50p,
what the price is now.
and it's £2 now, over
Okay, what was the lowest?
£2.
What was the COVID low? 20 pence, 30 pence, 40
50p,
pence?
it did. It got under 50p pre-21.
4 years, four bagged, five bagged in 5 years or whatever it is.
Oh, that makes me feel ill looking at that.
So for me, you know, that stock there, Centrica could be a prime example. Could that continue its momentum? It's got a monopoly in the UK, essentially. Yeah? Or not monolithic sort of tendencies around what it can do and what it can't do. Could that continue to compound going forward? Just an idea. Okay. You've gone all quiet, Henry. Are you chewed over the fact you let that one go?
I feel quite ill.
We've all got those,
Quite
mate.
ill.
I
Oh.
dare look back. It's you know when you go, you know, on those rare occasions. I'm not admitting this on podcast, by the way. You go through an amber light, and then as soon as you've gone through it, you turn around and think, "I'm not looking back. I'm not looking back in case
This,
that light's gone
I
off,
think, ladies and
camera's gone."
gentlemen, you may remember the days when Wheelie was on the podcast and used to talk about the market gods. I think this is the podcast gods wreaking karma on me for taking the mick out of Peter earlier in the episode. So
Maybe, mate. Maybe,
I'll
maybe.
pick myself up off the floor. And maybe shall we draw a line under this episode, with a brief recap of what we've discussed?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I was going to tell you about one adventurous stock
Oh,
as well,
go on,
too. That
throw
could
in
have a
your
catalyst.
adventurous one. Throw in your adventurous one before we close.
This is possibly one of the most hated stocks in the stock market, Henry.
God.
Yeah. Everyone hates it. Everyone hates the CEO.
Oh
And
no.
some people like the product but don't like the CEO. And the product that they sell, or main product they sell amongst all the other products they sell, is called MyProtein. And the CEO is called Matthew Moulding. Company's based in Manchester. I've just purchased the stock. And one of the triggers for me for purchase, I've traded it in and out and made a fair bit of money on it. I'm buying it for the next catalyst. But one of my triggers was a couple of people. I think you were included in one of the conversations, Henry, actually, saying, what a load of beep, 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 this company is. And the CEO, beep, 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 beep. And I was like, oh, let me go and have a look what they're saying. What's that? I'm thinking,
If Henry doesn't
actually,
like it, it must be good.
let me just do me, you know, my scrapyard, you know, thing and go, right,
Scrapyard
okay.
challenge, yeah.
Everyone, scrapyard challenge. Everyone hates it. Everyone's dissing on it. Let me go and have a look. So I've made a little sub 30 pence purchase on this stock, Henry. Let's
Oh.
see what happens between now and Crimbo, mate. So that's
What have you
my,
bought?
this is my, do not put this in your eyes. So do not listen to Pete. This is not a recommendation. This is just me saying, let's see what happens. Very
Ladies and
contrarian,
gents,
loathed and hated. THG is the ticker
that is
symbol.
a perfect example of an optionality play. Put 1% of your portfolio in, put 0.5% in, right?
Don't
Put
put any in your portfolio. Just wait and see Pete coming on here in 9 months' time going,
even better,
Henry, you know what? I wish I hadn't gone anywhere near it. It turned out to be
let
worse than one of
Pete
the
put
REITs I spoke
half a
about.
percent in, and then when it all goes wrong, you can come and tell me, and then I can have a good laugh about it.
Yeah, so there you go. People like a bit of adventure, don't they? Well,
I
maybe
love
not
it.
that
I
much.
love it. I love it, Pete.
Right, so I'll let you close, Henry. Where do you want to close?
So what we've talked about today, so ISA sees it. Most investors think of ISA sees in terms of what to buy, right? But very few think about what to prioritize inside the ISA structure. And this is the important thing. The ISA structure sort of dictates what you should be driving at. If you had to choose what must sit inside the ISA and what can sit elsewhere, this is kind of how I look at it. So a simple hierarchy. Things that produce a high yield or an income asset. So we've talked about a few of those today, like the REITs. Best to shelter those from tax. Best get those tucked away in your ISA so when the income comes in, you're not paying your dividend tax to the tax. If you've got a high turnover strategy, if you think you're going to buy THG Group and Matt Moulding's suddenly going to go to the moon and you're going to be a millionaire this time next year, probably better to do that inside your ISA where the tax man can't come after the gains. If you've got a long duration compounder, something you think is going to grow slow and steady over many, many years. Pete's Tesco, right? Starts out as a middling supermarket, now touches one in four people in the UK. Over many, many years, this thing's grown and grown and grown. Just imagine what your returns would be and the associated tax liability should you have held for that period. Again, will benefit from tax-free reinvestment. And finally, you've got your low yield, low return assets, right? This is stuff that doesn't really pay much of a dividend. You're not really sure it's going to make much of a return. Least urgent to shelter. So this sort of introduces the idea of capital efficiency, not just allocation. How can you use that tax shelter to the best advantage? You can only put 20,000 in this year. You can only put 20,000 in next year. What are you going to shelter from the tax man using that 20,000? And that, in my opinion, is the way to go about it. So hopefully we've given you some food for thought. Hopefully we've given you some names to go away and research. Do let us know on X, on Blue Sky, on LinkedIn, if you've got names you're researching, if you think I'm crazy, if you think Pete's crazy, if you think we're geniuses, you love the ideas, whatever, do let us know. Please do consider going and donating a few pounds at justgiving.com if you've enjoyed the episode. And yeah, I think that's a wrap from us.
It is a wrap, Henry, but we've got some breaking news for people, haven't we? Going to
Oh,
share the breaking news?
I forgot the breaking news, ladies and gentlemen.
You
So
forgot the
breaking, I
breaking
only just
news.
found out. Go on,
Yeah,
Pete.
ladies and gents, a few bits of news. We have been asked and summoned and requested, and the
Back by
people
popular
at
demand.
popular demand, actually is popular demand when the main person that runs the whole shoot of the event says, "We'd love to have you there. Please come along. You did just a fantastic job, you and Henry, last year." Henry and I will be, ladies and gents, at the Master Investor Show on April the 25th at the Islington Business Centre. And you can go and get your tickets from www.masterinvestorshow.com. It's got an absolute fan, it's an absolute fantastic venue. Got fantastic individuals speaking there. Of course, you've got Jim Mellon and some fantastic other fund managers and investment trust managers there, as well as other companies there. And you're going to have Henry and I doing a live Twin Peaks podcast for the second time. Went down so well last year, they've asked us to come back. And Henry's come up with a fantastic idea regarding what we're going to do on that day. It's going to be very, very interactive. And we're going to ask individuals to turn up with a couple of names from their portfolio or stocks that they like. And we're going to review those as ideas to put into a portfolio. And I think maybe actually run it as a portfolio that we look again to go back in, if they invite us back in 2027, as to how that portfolio was done. But yeah, come along on Saturday the 25th to the Master Investor Show. Go and get your tickets. Henry and I will be there. We'd love to see you all. And also grab a beer later when it's done. Anyway, that's the news, mate.
Is the news. I nearly forgot. I
Yeah.
nearly
We
forgot.
yeah, so we'll be there. We will be there. We'd love to see you. So see you on the 25th. It's only 4 weeks away. 4 weeks away, and we'll be on stage again. So that's the breaking news, folks. We hope that's good news. And we haven't put anybody off. Those that were going, oh, we're going, we're not going now. But hopefully, Henry and I will see you both. Both of us will see you all there. We're almost 90 minutes in, Henry, oblige. Right, ladies and gents, rolling up to Easter. The sun, it was the warmest day today in Leicester, year to date. The actual sun, I could feel, I was like, oh, that's nice. Last week it was freezing. So I hope it maintains warmth for you guys, ladies and gents. Have a fantastic Easter break with your fa friends, family, and loved ones. Rest, recharge, rejuvenate. And then we'll see you in 2 weeks' time when you come back, hopefully from a brilliant break from Easter. Henry and I have already organized our guest for the next podcast. It's the person that most of you, 99% of you, already know, and you're going to love what that person is going to say. I'm not going to give away the gender either. So yeah, something to look forward to. But we want to hear your, see your retweets and reposts and shares on every platform. We'd love to see your feedback and commentary regarding this particular podcast. And just keep liking it on YouTube and sharing it on LinkedIn and letting us know how we're doing, whether we're doing it right, and how we can improve it as well. Yeah. And let us know if you've bought a ticket for Master Investor Show and you're going to attend. And we'll talk a bit more about Investor Summit on the next pod. Right. Henry, that's it, mate. Thank you ever so much again. Thank you for the chinning and the bruises I've got again. I'm going to come on one of these podcasts with a head mask on, like I'm going boxing, because the stocks I pick always get jabbed at. Ladies and gents, take care. God bless you all. Henry and I will see you in 2 weeks' time. All the very best. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.